You're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. My name is Ron, and this is your monthly North State Water Report. The North State Water Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit friendsof.art and by Drunken Dumpling in Chico, serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Ave, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday, and from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at DrunkenDumplingChico.com. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. And I'm going to play one more song while I get my first guest on the air, and we'll get going with the show.
And the thunder rumble. let it rain. Oh, let it rain. Lord, won't you let it rain? Oh, let it rain. Won't you let it rain?
It was that I heard. Looking all around, I could swear that I saw magic everywhere. Searching for that sound of hope that I heard. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear the sound of people singing all across the land, songs that have been banned. Forbidden bells are ringing, talking very low, telling what they know about a time when all the creatures share the earth. I thought I heard you speak. I thought I heard you speak. But you're just an animal or some old tree. But I could swear you said that you are my friend. I thought I felt some love. I thought I felt some love. I thought I felt some love from all the mountains around here. I thought I felt a melting in my heart. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear the sound of people singing all across the land, songs that have been banned. Forbidden bells are ringing, talking very low, telling what they know about a time when all the creatures share the earth. I thought I had a dream. I thought I had a dream. And in my dream I realized that this dream would come true. And then I knew that I had magic too. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear the sound of people singing all across the land, songs that have been banned. Forbidden bells are ringing, talking very low, telling what they know about a time when all the creatures share the earth. I thought I heard a sound. I thought I heard a sound. I thought I heard a sound of magic everywhere.
And I'm back, and I'm actually having a problem. I'm having a problem reaching my first guest by phone, so I'm going to play another song here, and hopefully I can get my first guest tonight will be Regina Cheeky-Zola from Save California Salmon, and I'm hoping she will answer the phone this time. I'm going to play one more song and try to get her on. Thanks for your patience.
I
Simon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living here forever. The Simon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living on this land forever. Then the Russians came for the fur and ground. They built log forts and we burned them down. Then the great flu came, taking old and young. We gathered who was left and we begin again. The salmon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living here forever. Salmon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living on this land forever. Then the oil rigs came, promising us jobs, leaving oil sheets as we carry on. Then the loggers came, taking the great tree, leaving mountains bare, leaving muddy streets. The salmon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living here forever. The salmon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living on this land forever. They come for the gold underneath our river to destroy our home, take our children's future. We are one small town. We are one proud people. We are one with salmon. We are one with eagle. We are one small town. We are one proud people. We are still surviving. We are still surviving. I do not believe Creator wants this to happen. I do not believe Creator wants this to happen. I do not believe Creator wants this to happen. I do not believe Creator wants this to happen. Salmon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living here forever. Salmon come home again and again since the beginning of time, the beginning of when we've been living here. We've been living on this land forever. We've been living here. We've been living on this land forever. The salmon come home again and 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 again.
And we're back, and I'm actually going to do the show a little backwards tonight because my second guest is here, and I can't reach my first guest on the phone. But first, I'm going to give a little update on some of the more controversial water projects happening in the North State. Sites Reservoir continues to gain financial support from various water agencies and districts. In March, the California Water Commission increased project funding through the California Water Commission Proposition 1 sources to $887 million, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency invited supporting agencies to apply for a $2.2 billion loan. In April, the Metropolitan Water District Board of Southern California said it would contribute $20 million to sites. Many environmental groups such as Save California Salmon, Aqua Alliance, and California Water Impact Network are in opposition of sites because sites reservoir because of its detrimental environmental impacts that have not been addressed in the new fast-tracked environmental impact review. If you want more information about Sites Reservoir Project, you can visit aquaalliance.net/latest news or visit savecaliforniasalmon.org/threats to our rivers. And you can also visit c-win.org/news. And in some other water news, a big win for the Winnemem Wintu tribe of Mount Shasta and other water advocates. After an 8.5-year effort, the California's 3rd District Court of Appeals ruled in their favor against Siskiyou County and the city of Mount Shasta's approval for a permit to allow Crystal Geyser Water Bottling Company to bottle Mount Shasta spring water. Crystal Geyser, who abandoned their bottling facility in Siskiyou County last year, has recently sold the facility to the investment group One Shasta LLC under the stipulation that the new owner cannot engage in water bottling and distribution. In March, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a new set of voluntary agreements between state water agencies and water districts and state water contractors. According to Governor Newsom, these agreements strike a needed balance between agriculture, municipal water users, and environmental needs. But many Native Californian tribes and water, fish, and environmental advocacy groups say these new agreements don't go nearly far enough to stop the extinction of endangered salmon, protect watershed habitat for many other species, and human health. Now we're going to talk about salmon, specifically endangered spring run Chinook. It was reported earlier this spring by White Mallard Duck Club member Chris Tocatlian that many returning endangered salmon to Butte Creek were dying as they tried to pass through the area known as the Butte Sink. Butte Creek isn't the only creek returning salmon. Spring run Chinook salmon are struggling in this year. Poudre Creek has also experienced a similar die-off. You can learn more about that one at californiawaterblog.com/Poudre Creek Fishkill. But here with me tonight is Alan Hawthorne of Friends of Butte Creek, who is largely responsible for Butte Creek even holding the only sizable endangered native spring run, spring Chinook salmon run. Alan, great to have you in here with us tonight.
Is this what I'm...
What mic you on there, too?
2, 1, 2.
All right.
You got it?
You should be live.
Sounds sort of live. Okay. It's a pleasure to be here, Ron. I always have a few words to say about salmon. And I appreciate your compliment regarding the success of the Butte Creek run, but really it's been a ton of activities, a lot in part by our fisheries agencies over the years, and a lot of other collaborative partners that were kind of at odds with the Department of Fish and Game, and pretty much everybody came together in the 90s and decided that if we all work together, we could possibly avoid a listing of the spring run salmon, and that would be beneficial to everybody up and down the system, including commercial fisheries. A collaborative effort really got things going and fixed all the fish ladders and fish screens along Butte Creek, took out half a dozen dams, at least, and replaced one huge problem area at the Western Canal crossing They actually took out four dams at that location and ran the water through a pipe underneath the creek, three 9-foot pipes that carry the full flow of the Western Canal from the east side of Butte Creek to the west side. And essentially that opened up passage from just below the Midway Dam at the Goral, or the Midway Bridge at the Goral Dam, down to Highway 162 down in Sutter County at that point, and really changed the whole dynamic of the Spring Run migration, both upstream and downstream. My role has been primarily to more or less make sure that people are paying close attention to the fish, and that they are understanding the needs and appreciating the fact that the greater community places great value in having our wild salmon right here in our backyard, and everybody wants to see things get better. We're in a situation where climate may be pushing us in the wrong direction. Most likely it is, but there are lots of things we can do, and that's kind of what I do, is push people along to get things done.
Yeah, so I know you went out to the Butte Sink after Chris from the White Mallard Duck Club had posted a video of a lot of the returning salmon dying this year on their, struggling to get through the Butte Sink. So, I mean, what challenges do the fish have on their way from the Sacramento through that Butte Sink? And maybe you could describe for the listeners that don't know what is that Butte Sink like, and why are the salmon having all these challenges coming in there?
Well, the Butte Sink is, it kind of speaks for itself. It's where a lot of the Butte Creek watershed kind of empties into a basin right above where it used to join the Sacramento River, at Butte Slough. And because it's, pretty much the gradient has flattened out throughout that entire area, water tends to spread in all different directions. And it just so happens, as you might imagine, there's all kinds of different uses of that water as it spreads out through the area. So there are irrigation diversions, there are lots of duck clubs, there are wildlife refuges, all of whom have some sort of diversions to take advantage of that water for waterfowl and agriculture. And it's a very complicated system. If you could imagine what a real jungle section of the Delta looked like back in the 1800s, early 1800s, when, nobody had come in and cut down all the riparian trees, and, there were sloughs and lakes and everything all over the place. That's pretty much what the Butte Slough and the Butte Sink is like. I've always said it's the closest thing to the real Delta that we used to have. And, in fact, what's happening is, and probably related to the drought, is that a lot of vegetation has built up in places where water used to flow and fish used to migrate through the main channel of Butte Creek. There apparently were some other issues that diverted water away from the main channel of Butte Creek and into some irrigation canals and drain canals, and the fish were kind of tricked into going the wrong way.
Well, you went out there. What did you observe when you were out there?
Essentially, that Butte Creek kind of disappeared into a forest. There was a pretty good flow coming over one of the dams right above the White Mallard Duck Club, and as we traveled down along Butte Creek, it got smaller and smaller and pretty much disappeared. Down a little bit farther below that is where a couple of different sloughs come together, Drumheller Slough, and I don't know all the names of the other ones, but there are irrigation canals, there are drain canals, all of which generally have water in them. I think in all but the most critically dry years, everything out there's got water in it. In spite of the drought we're having right now, there's still quite a bit of water down there. So essentially the main channel of Butte Creek didn't have enough water in it, and the fish took the nearest, you know, flow and headed up and into a dead end, essentially.
Yeah, the report, I mean, Chris didn't mention an amount, but Dan Barker wrote a article about that, and he estimated about 200 fish.
I would say at least that many.
Yeah.
In the very small area that I walked through, there was, you know, more than a dozen fish, and a lot of parts of fish that were in various stages of decomposition,
right,
by the wildlife, yeah, out there.
Good food. Are you seeing anything come up by your place into the hole yet?
Yeah, there's lots of fish up there.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be another incredible run.
You're going to get PG&E to release water this year so we don't have a problem like we did last year?
You know, it looks like we have adequate water supplies up there this year for the first time in several years. Philbrook Reservoir is full.
Could you talk a little bit about what happened last year? Yeah,
I'd be happy to do that. Yeah. And the upper reservoir above that Round Valley is probably full as well. There's still some snow up there, if you can believe that. But
well, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, that last couple storms really helped out. So,
yeah.
Essentially, last year we had an amazing run of fish, and that's a whole story in itself. And I'll try to keep that part as short as possible, but the three-year-old fish that came back last year were the fish that were born literally under the smoke of the campfire. A lot of people have probably heard this story before, but we really had very little hope that the juvenile salmon were going to survive the devastation of the homes and you know, shops and all the toxics that, you know, were released into the atmosphere and into the soil. And then the rains, it washed, you know, tons of ash and other debris down into the creek. It just didn't seem like a real, you know, conducive environment for juvenile salmon growth. So it was just the hugest surprise last spring, probably early March, when we started seeing dozens and dozens of fish coming up at once, sometimes all day long, just in groups of 5, 6, 10 sometimes. Leaping over the dams like, you know, I've never seen. And it just continued through the spring until in May and early June, I was predicting that we had close to 20,000 fish.
I was hearing 16, 18, even up to 20.
Yeah, the most official one from the agencies is about 16. They never did get to do a very good count for a number of reasons, but for me, I've been observing them in my pool for 27 years now, and this was by far the most fish I have ever seen, and by a order of magnitude. And keep in mind, in 1998, the Department of Fish and Game actually counted 20,000 fish. So we've had huge runs like this before, but this one was pretty exceptional. So It was a hot spring.
We didn't get the late rains and a little bit of snow like we did this year. So hopefully there'll be a difference. But
yeah, and June, you know, started heating up pretty quickly. About the middle of June, we had our first 105 degree day, 107 or something like that. And, you know, it was heating up the water up in the upper watershed. And there are two reservoirs up there that feed into what's called the Hendricks Canal that brings water from the west branch of the Feather River over to Butte Creek. It was originally for gold mining. Since about 1900, it has been owned by PG&E for hydroelectric production. They have water rights to the west branch and the right to bring it over to Butte Creek, which is pretty unusual in our in our state, but there are other examples of it. But as it turns out, that is quite a benefit to the spring run salmon, because when that water that's coming over is cold, it will actually make Butte Creek colder, and that's a good thing. When the water is not managed properly and it comes over too warm, and it's actually warmer
or
than
too late,
you know, that too, but It really is all about temperature. If you can keep the temperature at a, you know, a reasonable level below 68 degrees, then you're going to do okay. As it turns out, they kind of ran out of water in one reservoir and didn't get the second reservoir that's full of the cold water, or at least it was three-quarters full of cold water. They didn't get that turned on for about 24 hours, and there was a significant flow decrease in the creek, and most certainly an increase in water temperature. And it's kind of hard to tease out the details because you have so many different factors with this. You've got your air temperature, you've got your ambient water temperature, you've got the import water, you've got water coming down from Upper Butte Creek, and it's not all real well monitored or managed. And it's happened many times in the past where that water coming in from the West Branch is warmer than the water coming down Butte Creek, and as a result can create a situation where disease kicks into gear much faster. And it appears that that may have been what happened last year. I'm certainly no expert. I don't have any biological evidence, but all indications are that this flow decrease precipitated the die-off, which started about a week to 10 days later, which is about what you would expect from a disease like ick and columnaris.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I was talking to someone from Fish and Wildlife that was up there doing counts, and they told me it was ick.
Yep, and then it just got worse and worse because there were so many fish and they were so crowded, the disease just flared through them like a wildfire.
I saw dead ones all the way down, if you just, you know, by the diversion into Comanche Creek, you know, all the way down there on Honey Run Road, down that low, there were dead fish floating by.
Yeah, so they estimate, and here again, they really haven't released any official data because they're just not sure of their numbers, and they don't want to be unsure, I guess. So,
well, they don't want to be that transparent.
Yeah, and they probably really don't want to come right out and say that 14,000 fish or more died on Butte Creek. But that kind of gets to one of the issues, is that regardless of how many fish we had, if it was 16,000 or 20,000 fish, the bottom line is that however many died, we came really, really close to losing the entire year class of perhaps the most spectacular return of spring run salmon we've ever had on Butte Creek, or at least in the last 100 years.
So we can sort of, you know, chalk this up to a couple of different situations happening. One with global warming and our continued drought problems here in Northern California, and mismanagement.
Absolutely. You know, it's an unfortunate colliding of events that's really putting pressure on the fish right now.
You know, it seems like that's what, you know, from what I read, you know, I talked to Chris a little bit. I was going to have him on the radio, but the president of the White Mallard Duck Club didn't want him to come on because apparently they're in meetings now with Fish and Wildlife to try to get permits. Also, you do know a little bit about that. I was wondering if you may have known that, because, I actually did get word from Chris this morning. He said that no permits have still been issued, and they're essentially hanging around down there, you know, trying to determine what equipment they'll need to try to clear that channel back out. And
yeah, it's a challenging situation down there when you have limited flow. You just don't have a whole lot of options.
So you're involved with those meetings, trying to get that sink kind of cleaned up and get that channel opened up?
I am on the operations group, is what they're calling it. And, mostly just to help out wherever I can. I mean, we've put together a lot of proposals for work up here in the upper part of the watershed, and I'm more than happy to join with the White Mallard Club. I've talked to them and a couple of the other clubs about putting in our own proposals to really do a full-scale analysis of all of these different flood channels and you know, main thawweg of the creek, and try to recreate it in such a way that all the duck clubs are feeding into this creek the same way at the same time, and there's no real opportunity for mismanagement.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing, is there isn't a whole lot of consideration by some people that either take water off of the creek for irrigation as to the timing of when the fish are coming in. They just kind of take their water when they need it. And from what I understand, what I read and what I've heard from Chris,
that's pretty much the case, and that's part of the reason this operation group is starting to get a little traction here, because we all recognize that we have to do something. It's getting critical.
Well, they're endangered. You know, if they weren't on the endangered species list, it'd be one thing. But they're on the endangered species list, and doesn't seem like anybody's really, you know, over the years has been in much of a hurry to really do anything and kind of get on board with some timing and make it work down there so these fish can get through.
You know, it's kind of interesting that Butte Creek, they really did put a ton of effort into everything in the 90s. Through the early 2000s, little bits and pieces, particularly down in the Sutter Bypass, and I think actually right above the duck clubs at Sanborn Slough, all of that was in the early 2000s. And they've still got, you know, two or three that they've been working on over the last 5 years. They may be down to the last weir that really needs a new fish ladder and a new operation strategy to ensure that they don't run out of water.
Yeah, because you know, with Friends of Butte Creek, you were involved with a lot of that early management to get all of those fish ladders updated and get people on board with timing their water diversions, and agreements were made, right?
Oh, yeah. It's because Butte Creek is such a complex system, there was a point in time where we realized that it was more than we could deal with to try to address problems in the Sutter Bypass and the Butte Slough and Sink, all up through the rice country, and we just needed to focus on what was happening in the upper part of the watershed. And really trying to get the community aware of how important this is and get them involved in that. So we kind of came to agreement with Ducks Unlimited that they would work on all of the projects down in the lower part of the creek, and we would focus on the upper part of the creek. And they did great things down there and got a lot of stuff going. But because Butte Creek is producing so many fish, I think people get a little bit lazy and think, well, you know, we don't really have to do anything right away. You know, there's a lot of fish in the creek, and, you know, we shouldn't have to worry about it, especially when there's 10,000 fish up there. But the problem is that if you get to June and July and we lose all of those fish up there, then it doesn't matter what happens down there.
Yeah, let's hope the water temperatures stay. I mean, how many fish are you figuring came up this year so far? Is there in the hundreds?
I'm guessing we're pretty close to 10,000 already.
Again? Yeah.
And,
okay.
And remarkably, the very first thing I noticed when I got down to the White Mallard and saw the first dead fish was how big it was.
So it's another 3 to 4 year old run, huh?
Well, spring run generally come back as 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds. Usually it's a much higher percentage of 3-year-olds. Sometimes, you know, we'll have 30 or 40% 4-year-olds, but it's less common. But this year, it looks like we have a very high percentage of 4-year-olds. And going back to my earlier conversation, these are our campfire fish. 4 years old, 2018. Some of the scientists that I work with at NOAA Fisheries and UC Davis are calling them the Phoenix fish. And they are really digging into the DNA of these things to try and figure out what it was that allowed them to be so successful. So it's an amazing thing. Butte Creek is just
the stories I've heard about salmon from some of the, you know, native tribes around here, specifically Colleen Siska, the one I'm went to, she'll talk about how fires benefit the fish. The fish need the forest fires and the rivers, and it just doesn't only help the ecology, it revitalizes everything when those fires come through, and the fish need it to thrive.
You know, the fish bring back a certain class of nutrients to our watersheds, basically ocean-derived carbon and nitrogen. But that's not everything that the watershed needs. And like you were saying, the fire is contributing nutrients in a way that the fish can't do that. And certainly not on the scale that fire does. You know, fertilizing, you know, thousands of acres with you know, phosphorus from ash is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And all of that contributes to, you know, the biological system that is our watersheds.
Yeah, I mean, 100 years of fire suppression is probably one of the factors in why our watersheds are unhealthy right now, and we're experiencing these droughts and, you know, mega dry years, you know, dry forest fire seasons, and
you know, we've cut off that nutrient pump of salmon.
Yeah, well, yeah, and the salmon not being able to renutriate everything either. Yeah, so that's another big factor in our watershed health.
Yep.
What else is Friends of Butte Creek up to as far as any other projects along the creek? Any other things going on?
Well,
I know you were trying to buy a water right.
Yeah, we're actually getting pretty close to getting our draft appraisal from the appraisers. And once we get that, we have to have it peer-reviewed. And then it goes to the State Department of General Services to make sure everything is okay. And then they will actually pay the owner of the water right to transfer that water right to us. We hope to have that done by the end of the year at the latest. It looks like it might be, you know, September, October. And that's kind of a landmark deal because I don't know of any other nonprofit conservation group that owns a water right. And it actually kind of gives us a seat at the table with the people who our other water rights holders. So I'm pretty excited about it. We're still raising money to pay for all of the extraneous things of this, the appraisal in particular, but we ultimately have to pay an annual fee to maintain this water right. So
that having a water right like that essentially guarantees that a certain amount of water won't get diverted off the creek anymore? Is that
right? Yeah. It's protected by a Fish and Game Code 1707, which is in-stream flow. So it can't be diverted by anybody. But if there's nobody that owns it, then anybody can take it. So as long as it's held as a legal water right, then essentially, part of this operations group is to ensure that that 5 CFS makes it all the way to the Sacramento River. It's a huge challenge. 5 CFS isn't much water down there, but there are other flows at various times. There's a 40 CFS flow right now that is supposed to go all the way to the Sacramento River. So if we can get this group to set up better gauging and monitoring stations along the way, then, you know, slowly but surely, we can ensure that, you know, we have a guaranteed flow in the creek.
Approximately how many people are pulling off of Butte Creek? Let's just say below 99.
Below 99, thanks. There is actually a 1948 adjudication by the Superior Court of all the water rights, and I've dug into it a little bit of the Upper Paradise water rights, and it's like there are springs everywhere up there. And everybody that, you know, lived on a spring, Murphy Spring and Hendrick Spring, and, you know,
they could whatever, just do whatever they wanted with that water,
they
right?
They all had to get that into the adjudication, how many miners' inches they were getting out of the spring that they were able to keep.
That happened in the 40s?
it started before that, but the actual Superior Court adjudication was, I think, 1948. But up there, there was probably 100 water rights just up in the Paradise Magalia.
Yeah, well, with all the mining. I mean, they completely dried up Little Butte Creek. Little Butte Creek doesn't even exist anymore. And from what I understand, that was the main creek that, when you talk to the Machupta Maidu around here, they didn't really live so much along Chico Creek. Like, they did, but Butte Creek was the bigger creek, or Little Butte Creek, from what I understand, was where they really...
Well, there's a bit of confusion. Little Butte Creek actually is a pretty substantial watershed that feeds Paradise Reservoir and Magalia Reservoir and enters Butte Creek right above the Cover Bridge, or the Honey Run Bridge. And it's been there forever. Unfortunately, it was one of those places where they dredger mined it to pieces and left it just a pile of rocks. And it's grown back, and people are, you know, have homes all along the creek there. But it's a highly disturbed area. It seems to me it would have been a wonderful place to live if before the settlers showed up. But there is also a Little Butte Creek out in the valley, and from what I've seen of the historical maps, Comanche Creek or Edgar Slough, which comes off of Butte Creek at the Parrot Phelan Dam, ended up dribbling out into the valley and eventually coming back into the main stem of Butte Creek down in Angel Slough. Now that little section down there on several of the older maps says Little Butte Creek, and that does disappear, but it's actually just the Comanche Creek water that's coming out there, and M&T and Llano Seco take their share of that water, and whatever is left spilling over is what is disappearing down there, apparently. And it's pretty much the same thing as Little Chico Creek, because Little Chico Creek gets out into that very same area, but then it just disappears. There's no real connection to...
Owen disappears pretty quickly these days, even up it comes off of Stilson Canyon.
On the maps, as a perennial stream, it disappears, which is kind of a significant thing. So.
Yeah. I'm going to take a quick break to do some station identification here. And you are listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR, Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is the North State Water Report, and you've been listening to Alan Hawthorne of Friends of Butte Creek. And North State Water Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by D.A. Lampe Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit dalampeconstruction.com. And by Mountain Sports, for over 45 years, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. So anything else you want people to know about Friends of Butte Creek and what's going on out there on Butte Creek? I know, you know, there's a lot of highly disturbed areas along Butte Creek, and that, you know, like the whole strip, you know, just along Honey Run Road below the bridge and where it crosses under Skyway has been heavily impacted by mining. And
you're absolutely right, and that's one of the things that we've been focused on for a number of years. After the campfire and the opening of the landscape, because all the brush was burned and many of the trees were burned, and all of a sudden you could see through and see very clearly how disturbed it is, it got me and my good friend Zeke Lunder talking about, this needs to be fixed, because not only is it disturbed habitat for the spring run salmon, but you know, all the other wildlife, the frogs and the snakes and everything else. And it's not that it's not habitat, it's just not good habitat, like a nice, you know, natural riparian corridor. So what we have been trying to get funded is a project to kind of map the whole area with the sophisticated ground penetrating radar that they use now, and understand the channel dynamics and try to figure out where the original fall wag of the creek was located, and look at what it would cost and what it would take to actually recreate the floodplain as it was before the miners came in there. And it's a huge project, but it's actually small compared to what they've done on the Trinity River, probably about the same as what they did on the Salmon River over off the Klamath. Similar in scope to Clear Creek up out of Redding, but much smaller than the Yuba Goldfields, which they're doing huge projects on right now and are getting rave reviews for the improved quality of the habitat on the Yuba River. So Butte Creek is a perfect place to do the same type of thing, and I think it'll make a huge difference to the rearing habitat, in particular of juvenile salmon. Right now, because of the condition of the habitat and the channelization through the mining tailings, juvenile salmon are kind of flushed through. What we want them to do is to take it slow, get out on the floodplain, get out where there's more food, away from predators, and then take their time going down, because the fatter they are and the bigger they are, the better off they're going to be when they get down to the delta. So that's the big thing these days, is improving the rearing habitat. One thing that's also really super important about that is that this floodplain expansion actually reduces flooding, because you're allowing the floodwaters to spread out and take more time getting downstream. And it also helps to increase groundwater recharge, because once again, you've got water sitting out on the floodplain, slowly but surely working its way down through the gravels and into the fractures and down into the groundwater. So recreating a fully functional floodplain up there is possible. It's a huge undertaking, but
is it going to displace some people that live up there?
No, actually, I think it'll offer protection to some of the people down just above the Skyway, who are right on the creek. But because of the condition of that riparian area over the years, we've seen some unbelievable evulsions of the creek, which means jumping out of its channel and going in a different direction. 97, the Parrot-Phelan Dam was completely abandoned by the creek, and it went through a section, you know, a couple hundred yards to the south. In 1986, the creek jumped into the mining tailing ponds right there at the preserve, and completely changed course. It now comes much closer to Honey Run Road and is through completely disturbed landscape, and nowhere near the original channel. So
it doesn't get a chance to meander like it used to.
All of that is just a ticking time bomb for a major flood downstream, because you get all that stuff moving, you get the creek jumping its channel and taking a different route one way or another, and it could very easily go into a rather large sewer plant that treats all the water from the homes up on the Skyway. And also, you know, half a dozen homes or so right down on the creek, right above the Skyway. So hopefully we can convince everybody that this is really the best thing to do in the long run, and we can get some funding for it.
Yeah, well, I know you're going to have some, the management of the ecological preserve over there is going to be changing hands, and I think you'll probably be able to get some cooperation going on over there.
I welcome cooperation from the Native Americans. I've been involved with a lot of the North Coast salmon restoration work, and the tribes have just been phenomenal over there, and the expertise that they have is tremendous, and they're always willing to share it, and as well, you know, a lot of the displaced fishermen over on the North Coast started construction business to fix the streams, take out roads, and some of them are actually working over here in Butte County now. So
yeah, there's a lot of traditional knowledge there that gets lost in academia that I think the native people in Northern California can bring to the table when we're talking about salmon restoration. And I know up on the McLeod River with the Winnemem Wintu trying to get the salmon brought back from New Zealand, it's been 12 or 13 years, and Chief Colleen Sisk is finally actually at the table with NOAA and DWR and Fish and Wildlife. For all these years now, she wasn't at the table.
Right.
And she's actually at the table now, so things are definitely moving forward.
Well, that's a real big issue, is getting fish up into the upper reaches of our watersheds. The winter run up the Sacramento River and the McLeod. Spring run, you know, they used to go up the Feather River above Lake Almanor. And there's efforts now to get them above Lake Orville or Orville Reservoir. None of them look very good to me.
Well, the truck and haul doesn't work. They need swimways and bypasses around the dams.
That's possible on the North Fork, but it's a huge undertaking, very expensive. And what I've been trying to encourage people to recognize is that Butte Creek is a perfect opportunity to open up habitat without having to do the truck and haul. There are some barriers that in low flows are a problem for the fish. They may not be that big a problem in higher flows, but we just haven't really studied it the way we need to, and that's kind of one of my priorities is to try to get some projects funded to do a better modeling job of the upper watershed and how it could be super beneficial to get them up there, because where they're getting to now is just getting a little bit too warm, and we can't just take them to another watershed. You know, they're here. All they have to do is open that passageway up. They hopefully could get all the way up to Butte Meadows.
That'd be amazing.
Yep.
I don't think it's a matter of we should do it any question as to whether we should do it or not. It has to be done. The salmon have to be allowed to get back up into these upper watersheds like that and do their thing. Otherwise, you know, the health of our watersheds are just going to continue to decline without salmon.
And I share a quote from somebody at DWR that I heard a couple of years ago before COVID, when we were actually having face-to-face meetings about all this, and they basically said, we're running out of time and we're running out of places. And Butte Creek is one place where we have an opportunity. Battle Creek, they're actually opening that up and looking at expanding the habitat up there, taking the hydroelectric project out. And that's another place where, you know, we could see a significant amount of spring run and winter run habitat opened up for the fish, which would just, you know, it would be the life ring for those two runs of fish right now.
Yeah, great. We are pretty much out of time. Alan, thank you for coming in this evening and educating us on Butte Creek and Friends of Butte Creek, what's been happening over the years, and hopefully some good things will happen with the meetings that you've been going to with Fish and Wildlife or down at the sink, and all of that can get straightened out.
I'm sure it will. It's going to take some time, and I when I first went to the first meeting, I thought, oh my God, this is much like CalFed, which was back in the mid 90s. And I'm like, they had a water program like this, and you know, it goes on for years and years and years, and you make a little bit of progress, but everybody gets tired and burned out. And hopefully we can get it done this time. So thank you for inviting me, and I'm always available, and glad to keep you up to date.
Okay, we'll bring you back on again as the months go on, and give